Today's sermon passage will be Revelation chapter 18. If you would open your Bibles and follow along as I read. Revelation is the last book in the Bible, in the New Testament, starting in chapter 18. After this, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was made bright with his glory. And he called out with a mighty voice, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a dwelling place for demons, a haunt for every unclean spirit, a haunt for every unclean bird, a haunt for every unclean and detestable beast. For all nations have drunk the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed immorality with her. And the merchants of the earth have grown rich from the power of her luxurious living." Then I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues, for her sins are heaped high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Pay her back as she herself has paid back others, and repay her double for her deeds. Mix a double portion for her in the cup she mixed. As she glorified herself and lived in luxury, so give her a like measure of torment and mourning. Since in her heart she says, 'I sit as a queen, I am no widow, and mourning I shall never see.' For this reason her plagues will come in a single day, death and mourning and famine, and she will be burned up with fire. For mighty is the Lord God who has judged her. And the kings of the earth who committed sexual immorality and lived in luxury with her will weep and wail over her when they see the smoke of her burning. They will stand far off in fear of her torment and say, 'Alas, alas, you great city, you mighty city, Babylon, for in a single hour your judgment has come.' And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn for her, since no one buys her cargo anymore, cargo of gold, silver, jewels, pearls, fine linen, purple cloth, silk, scarlet cloth, all kinds of scented wood, all kinds of articles of ivory, all kinds of articles of costly wood, bronze, iron, and marble, cinnamon, spice, incense, myrrh, frankincense, wine, oil, fine flour, wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots and slaves, that is, human souls. The fruit for which your soul longed has gone from you, and all your delicacies and all your splendors are lost to you, never to be found again. The merchants of these wares who gained wealth from her will stand far off in fear of her torment, weeping and mourning aloud. Alas, alas, for the great city that was clothed in fine linen, in purple and scarlet, adorned with gold, with jewels and with pearls. For in a single hour, all this wealth has been laid waste. And all shipmasters and seafaring men, sailors, and all whose trade is on the sea, stood far off and cried out as they saw the smoke of her burning. What city was like the great city? And they threw dust on their heads as they wept and mourned, crying out, 'Alas, alas, for the great city where all who had ships at sea grew rich by her wealth, for in a single hour she has been laid waste. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets, for God has given judgment for you against her.' Then a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, 'So will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence and will be found no more. And the sound of the harpists and musicians, of flute players and trumpeters will be heard in you no more. And a craftsman of any craft will be found in you no more. And the sound of the mill will be heard in you no more, and the light of a lamp will shine in you no more, and the voice of the bridegroom and bride will be heard in you no more. For your merchants were the great ones of the earth, and all nations were deceived by your sorcery. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all who had been slain on earth."
Thank you, Rachel. Well, this morning we continue our sermon series in the book of Revelation, and we are getting near the end, slowly but surely, as we come to chapter 18 here this morning. As we come to this chapter, I want you to think about your most embarrassing, and this might not apply to everybody in this room, but your most embarrassing fall. So one of mine is when I was in college, walking down the sidewalk on campus at the University of Oklahoma. It's kind of been a snowy, icy Oklahoma day. We don't really get snow there. It's mostly just ice. And so I'm with my friends. We're goofing around, laughing, doing all sorts of things. And I can't remember the exact reason, but for some reason, I started running and high-stepping down the sidewalk. Like I was a defensive back for the University of Oklahoma who had just intercepted a pass, who had caught the ball, and I'm headed to the end zone, right? On campus, in front of the largest building on campus, Dell Hall, where everybody's kind of gathering together. There I am running and high-stepping down the sidewalk. And before I know it, I slip on a patch of ice, and my feet just come up from under me, got this big old backpack on, and I just land straight on my back. And I could have sworn there were 10,000 people there in front of Dell Hall there, all going to class, who saw it all and just watching me just fall. True story. Another embarrassing fall, junior high, I believe, seventh-ish grade. I'm playing right field. No comments on that. But I'm playing right field. Pop fly, here it comes. I'm running, gonna get this pop fly, running to get underneath it. So I'm tracking the ball. I get it. Kind of get underneath it, and I still don't know how it happened. But I'm kind of underneath this ball, and then somehow, some way, I just fall down. I don't know if I tripped over my shoes. I don't know if I had a shoelace that was undone. Fall. The ball hits the runner the batter that hit the ball first, second, third, inside the park home run, because the right fielder stumbled over his feet and fell. I wonder if I'm the only one. What's your most embarrassing fall? The reason I mention that is those are funny and embarrassing moments, but this morning we come to chapter 18, and we're going to see another fall. And the fall that we're going to see here in chapter 18 is, as Rachel just read, it's anything but embarrassing. Or funny. And so the fall we're going to see here, it's tragic. It's sad. It's sobering. The fall that we're going to see here in chapter 18, here is none other than the fall of the world in which we live. The current state, the current form, the fallen world, the fallen culture, the worldly system in which we live. Meaning the day in which the world and the culture in which we live and the worldly system in which we live falls. Meaning it comes tumbling down. It comes crashing down. It comes to an end and there is no more. Which is what we see if you're following along when Rachel read here in chapter 18, specifically in verse 2. It says there that the angel cries out here in this mighty voice, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great." So then if you remember, especially from last week and even the week before, we talked about how this, all throughout Revelation, Babylon is a reference again to the fallen world, the fallen culture, the worldly system in which we live. In other words, it's a reference to this, just the wicked, sinful, depraved, anti-God world and culture in which we live today, in which we make our home in today. And so then for John and those that he was writing to, Babylon would have been a symbol for Rome and the Roman Empire, because that's the world in which they lived. They lived in Rome. They lived in the Roman Empire. It was the symbolic for the Babylon was symbolic for the Roman Empire and the world in which they lived. It was the Babylon of their day. And so then, when Rome fell, though, and the Roman Empire fell, that didn't end Babylon. Instead, the spirit of Babylon continued, and it continues into the world and culture in which we live in today. And so then, if you remember from last week in chapter 17, we saw then how Babylon, again, the fallen world and fallen culture in which we live, it, in chapter 17, we saw how it fell. It came tumbling down. And we even saw that all the way back in chapter 16, verse 19, with the seventh bowl of God's judgment that was poured out on Babylon, meaning it's the end of the world, it's the end of the age, it's the final judgment when Babylon, the world in which we live, is judged and falls and comes tumbling down. And in chapter 18 then, what we're going to see this morning then is how we should respond then to that reality. How we should respond then to that fact. In other words, if this is all true, if what we saw last week and into chapter 16 with this fall of Babylon, the wrath of God being poured out on Babylon, the end of history, the end of the age coming, and the final judgment when the fallen world, the fallen culture in which we live, all comes to an end. It all comes crashing down, comes tumbling down. Like, if that's not just make-believe, if that's reality, if that's true, then how should we respond to that reality? Like, what should we do? Well, that's the answer that chapter 18 is going to answer for us this morning. How should we respond to Babylon's coming fall? And the first response is this, we're going to see is this, and we're going to spend most, or the far majority of our time on this first response. But the first way we should respond is this. You see it on your hand out there. We should come out of Babylon. We should come out of Babylon. This is what we're going to see in the first eight verses here in chapter 18. That these eight verses, in the first two verses of chapter 18, it's going to begin with this pronouncement of Babylon's fall, this pronouncement of Babylon's fall. We see this in verse 1 and in verse 2 of chapter 18. Look there with me. John says in verse 1, he says, "After this, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was made bright with his glory. And he called out with a mighty voice, 'Fallen, fallen is Babylon the great.'" And so then we've seen this description before, right, of Babylon. We've seen this over and over again in Revelation, and we're going to see this more in chapter 18. This specific description, not that Babylon is cool, Babylon is awesome, it's great. Babylon is great. Meaning, as we're going to see in chapter 18, she's wealthy, she's rich, she's prosperous, she's powerful, she's strong, she's mighty. And so then this is who Babylon would have been, or ancient Babylon would have been in the Old Testament. It's true of who Babylon in John's day, Rome, would have been. And it's true in our day of who Babylon is today. The world and culture in which we live, the world in which we live, right? Bright lights. Big cities, big, tall buildings, pay athletes hundreds and hundreds of million dollars to dribble a basketball and hit a baseball. And you pay, there's billions of dollars going to the sports industry and music industry and entertainment industry. Like, it might not feel like it, but we're living in like Disneyland. Like, Babylon is filthy rich. Babylon is strong and mighty and powerful. In other words, it's Babylon's great. But even though Babylon is great, did you notice what the angel says is going to happen to Babylon in verse 2? Look at verse 2 again. He says that it's going to fall. He says, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. And he says, she has become a dwelling place for demons, a haunt for every unclean spirit, a haunt for every unclean bird, a haunt for every unclean and detestable beast. And so then, I don't know how to say this, but like this would have been utterly shocking. Like no one would have believed this. I'm trying to wrap your mind around this. Nobody would expect and believe that this wealthy, prosperous, powerful, strong, mighty city is going to fall. That it's going to all come crashing down. That this wealthy, prosperous city in which we live is going to be a pile of rubble. Like nobody would have believed that. But that's exactly what's going to happen. That this world in which we live, with all of its impressive buildings and innovations and money and stock market and wealth and power, is going to become nothing but a barren wasteland. Just filled with a bunch of demons and unclean animals. Like, have you ever Googled, if you haven't, like, Google, not during the sermon, abandoned Olympic venues. We watched the Olympic, the opening ceremonies, this great stadium, this venue, and all the technology and money and millions and hundreds of millions, not billions of dollars, poured into building these huge, massive stadiums and venues. And it's impressive, bright lights, and it's awe-inspiring. 3 years later, you know what most of those venues look like? A wasteland. Not even being used. Overgrown weeds and looks like it's abandoned and not used because it's not. Just looks like a shell of itself. Looked nice for 2 minutes or 2 years. And 2 years later, it's like a piece of trash. If you noticed here that the angel talks about this in the present tense, as if Babylon has already fallen. But as we know, that's not the case. Instead, what John's doing here, he's simply describing what he presently sees in this vision. But the vision that he sees is describing events that are still yet to come. When the Babylon that we live in right now comes falling and comes crashing and comes tumbling down. Which is explicitly made clear at the very end of chapter 18. Look at verse 21. And in verse 21, really through verse 23, it describes in more detail the future results or the future effects of Babylon's coming fall and Babylon's coming destruction. Verse 21 says, and this is sad, look at verse 21. It says, then a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, so will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence, and we be found no more. And so what this angel is doing, he's using this millstone as an illustration of what's going to happen to Babylon. That a millstone was this super heavy, heavy stone. And so when you throw this super heavy stone into a lake or into water, then that super heavy stone, that millstone's going straight to the bottom. It's not going to float at the top. It's going straight to the bottom, and it sure isn't going to come up. And that's a picture, that's an illustration of what he says is going to happen to Babylon, to the world and culture in which we live. It's going to be thrown down and sink straight to the bottom of the sea, demolished, destroyed, straight to the bottom of the sea, never to be heard from or seen again. And when that happens then, here's what the result's going to be. Look at verse 22. And the sound of harpists and musicians, of flute players and trumpeters will be heard in you no more. No more music in Babylon then. When Babylon falls, no more singing, no more songs, no more instruments playing. All the music in the world will be no more. It'll be just death. That's not all. Look at the rest of verse 22. And a craftsman of any craft will be found in you no more, and the sound of the mill will be heard in you no more. In other words, like no more industry, no more production, no more businesses, no more jobs. They'll all be gone when Babylon comes crushing down. Verse 23 says that, and the light of a lamp will shine in you no more. So in our day, think electricity, right? Think about the hurricanes that just hit and took out all the electricity. It's the picture here. No electricity, no streetlights, no internet, no refrigerator running. It's all come crushing down. No, none of that. It's just dark. Then the end of verse 23 says, and the voice of bridegroom and bride will be heard in you no more. When Babylon comes crushing down, no more weddings, no more marriages, no more celebrations, because Babylon will just be a pile of rubble, be destroyed. So then feel the sadness of that, right? The tragedy of Babylon's coming fall. Do you notice what's being described here? It's the exact opposite of what's going to happen in the new creation to come. In Revelation 21, we're told that in the new creation that's going to come, all the bad things in life will disappear and be no more. No more sin, no more death, no more suffering, no more tears. All the bad things in life will be untrue. They'll all disappear. They'll all come to an end. But when Babylon falls, the exact opposite will be true. That instead of all the bad things in this world being removed, when Babylon falls, all the good things in this world are going to be removed and disappear and be no more. Instead, all there will be death. No more music, no more industry, no more light, no more wedding celebrations, none of that anymore. I know when you think of that, it's hard to even wrap your mind around that, isn't it? Because all we see right now is, look at this building. It's nice. Look at the county, Johnson County, in which you live. Just drive around. It's nice. Think of Kansas City. Think of the United States of America. Think about just the world in which we live and the glitz and the glamour and the buildings and the structure and the prosperity and all those things. And you're like, how in the world is all of this just going to go? Pfft? It's going to happen. This fallen world and culture in which we live, it's going to fall. It's going to collapse. It will be no more. That's the pronouncement of Babylon's fall, which then leads to, next then, the reason for Babylon's fall. In other words, why is this going to happen? Like, why is Babylon going to fall? Why is this great and mighty world and culture which we live in, why is it one day going to tumble down and be destroyed? Why is that? Well, here's why. We see it in verse 3. Look at verse 3 with me. It says, for all nations have drunk the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have grown rich from the power of her luxurious living. And so the angel here, if you notice, mentions three different groups of people, or three types of people here. Mentions the nations, the kings of the earth, and the merchants of the earth. And he says here that they've committed sexual immorality with Babylon, which goes back to what we saw in chapter 17 last week. Not literally, but symbolically. Meaning they've fallen in love with Babylon. They're infatuated with Babylon. They've gotten into bed with Babylon. They've united themselves with Babylon and her immorality and her idolatry and all the lust for wealth and power and sensuality in Babylon and the love for security and a life of luxury that's found in Babylon. They've bought into it hook, line, and sinker. And so that's the first reason that Babylon's going to fall. But if you look down at verse 5, the angel continues and gives us more reasons for why Babylon's going to fall. And in verse 5, he says, her sins are heaped as high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. So Babylon's iniquities, Babylon's sins have just multiplied high as heaven. The world and culture in which you live, sin is heaped up as high as heaven. As a result, verse 6 says, pay her back as she herself has paid back others and repay her double for her deeds. Mix a double portion for her in the cup she mixed. In other words, this angel's crying out to the Lord, give her what she deserves. Make her punishment fit her crime. Verse 7 goes on to describe the reason for, but more reasons for Babylon's fall. Look at verse 7. The angel says, as she glorified herself and lived in luxury, so give her a like measure of torment and mourning. Why? Since in her heart she says, I sit as a queen. I am no widow. In mourning I shall never see. The picture here is of Babylon feeling invincible. When Babylon looks at all that she has and how powerful she is, how wealthy and strong and prosperous she is, she glorifies herself. She pats herself on the back. She thinks that she's hot stuff. She thinks she's invincible. Or as verse 7 says, she thinks she's a queen and will never be a widow. In other words, in the Old Testament, this metaphor of a widow was used on occasion for cities, for nations who were defeated in war and desolated. But Babylon here is boasting, that's never going to happen to me. I'm never going to be one of those nations. I'm never going to be one of those countries who are defeated in war, and I'm not going to fall. I'm not going to be desolated. It's not going to happen to me. I'm going to sit on the throne as a queen. I'm invincible. Nothing can touch me. As a result, and look what God says he's going to do in verse 8. The angel says, for this reason, her plagues will come in a single day. Death and mourning and famine, and she will be burned up with fire. And here's why. For mighty is the Lord God who has judged her. So then this is why Babylon is going to fall. This is why Babylon is going to be burned to the ground, why Babylon is going to be destroyed. That she's going to fall and crumble down because of her sin, because of her pride, because of her arrogance, because of her feelings of invincibility, and because of her immorality and her idolatry. Like, just think about this. This is kind of ironic. Like, people today, supposed experts, have all sorts of ideas and theories about how the world is going to come to an end. Environmentalists believe the world is going to come to an end because of global warming. Many astronomers believe the world is going to come to an end because of a massive meteor. It's going to blow everything up. Others believe the world is going to come to an end because of a nuclear war. Most of the movies in Hollywood believe the world is going to come to an end because of an alien invasion. The real reason the world is going to come to an end is because of God's judgment against sin. That's the ultimate reason for why the Babylon in which we live, the fallen world system and culture in which we live, is going to come to tumbling down, not ultimately because of global warming or a meteor or an alien invasion or a nuclear war or anything like that. Instead, the infinitely holy God is going to pour out the full fury of his wrath on Babylon, on this world in which we live. And it's going to fall and come tumbling down. That's the real reason Babylon's going to fall. If that's true, then, begs this next question. It's the question we started with. How should we respond? What should we do then? If this is where everything is headed, how should we respond? Well, we see in verse 4 how we should respond. Look there with me. John says, "Then I heard another voice from heaven saying, 'Come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues.'" So then, I don't know about you, but this is kind of logical, rational. This is the smart response, right? Like if you're living in a city and you know a deadly tornado is headed your way that guarantees, you know in advance, it's gonna bring everything to the ground. Like everything, every structure, it's all fallen. If you know that your city is about to be crumbled, be a pile of rubble, what are you going to do? You're going to get out of there. You're going to hightail it out of there. You're going to run. You're going to flee. You're going to get out of there as quick as you can. Well, that's what God is telling us as Christians, as his people. He's saying Babylon is coming down. It is coming down. So leave, flee, get out of there, quick. So then, that doesn't mean we need to leave like immediately after church, go home, pack our bags, load up in the car, and just start driving. Get out of Overland Park, get out of Kansas City, get out of the United States, get out of the world, get off the grid somewhere. That's not what there's nowhere you can go. It's the world in which we live. Where are you going to go? It's not what he means. He's not talking about leaving Babylon, symbolic Babylon, geographically. He's talking about leaving Babylon spiritually. In other words, the way we leave Babylon is leaving the sins of Babylon behind. The way we leave Babylon is by separating ourselves from the sins of Babylon. The way we leave Babylon is by not aligning ourselves with the priorities and the beliefs and the worldview and the values of Babylon. The way we leave Babylon is not worshiping the different idols and gods of Babylon. And so then this call to leave Babylon and come out of Babylon isn't a call to literally leave the city or country or world in which we live. Instead, it's a call to holiness. It's a call to be set apart. It's a call to separation from wickedness and the wicked, sinful pleasures and temptations and the values and beliefs and idols in Babylon. Because if we don't do that, then the end of verse 7 or the end of verse 4 says that we'll share in the plagues of Babylon and we'll fall and crumble down with Babylon just with Babylon. And so then think about this in application, like just get really practical here in your own life. You know the Babylon, the world and the culture in which we live, and the sin and the values and the priorities and the gods and all that sort of stuff. You know what they are. You don't need me to tell you what they are. You know what they are. And so then what sins of Babylon do you need to flee? What sins of Babylon do you need to come out of? What sins of Babylon have you subtly just embraced, willingly chosen, that you need to flee and come out of? Is it greed and materialism that's so prevalent all around us? Is it selfish ambition, the desire to make a name for yourself, to be esteemed in the eyes of others? Is it fear of man and living for the approval of others rather than living for the approval of God? Is it sins of the mouth? Do you talk like Babylonians? Gossip, little white lies, slander here and there. Have you adopted Babylon's view of marriage, of parenting, of singleness? Have you adopted Babylon's view of just self, worship self, live for self, focus on self. Center your whole life around yourself. What sins of Babylon have you bought into? That's no different from the culture in which we live that you need to come out of and flee. If you're here this morning, though, and you're not a Christian, you might be wondering, like, what's he talking about? I get it. Like, or what does any of this mean for you? Like, how do you come out of Babylon? How do you do that? You do it the same way that we as Christians have come out of Babylon. By first confessing and believing that you're a sinner and you're deserving to fall and be destroyed along with Babylon. But you don't stop there. Then you trust. You believe, okay, if this whole thing's come crashing down, then the only hope I have for being rescued and escaping this coming fall of Babylon is Jesus. That I believe that he died on the cross in my place for all those who would ever trust and believe in him by faith. That he took the fall of Babylon on himself for all those who rely and trust on his substitutionary death as their only hope for escaping the fall of Babylon that's to come. Oh, if that's not you this morning, I encourage you to trust and rely upon Jesus and his substitutionary death now. So then if you're here this morning, you're not a Christian, respond in that way. So that's the first way we should respond then to Babylon's coming judgment and fall and destruction. That's the longest one. Second way is to come out of Babylon. The second way we should respond then is this. It's to not put our hope in Babylon. Not put our hope in Babylon. We see this in the negative examples that are given to us, starting in verse 9 through verse 19. These verses, verse 9 through 19, are basically a funeral lament. It's a funeral. Imagine Babylon having a funeral. And there's three different groups of people who are at this funeral, and they're weeping. They're sobbing. They're grieving because Babylon is dead, and Babylon has fallen, and is no more. And so the first group who's at this funeral and who mourns over Babylon's fall are the kings of the earth. And so we see this in verse 9. Look at verse 9. It says, "And the kings of the earth who committed sexual immorality and lived in luxury with her, with Babylon, will weep and wail over her when they see the smoke of her burning. They will stand far off in fear of her torment and say, 'Alas, alas, you great city, you mighty city, Babylon, for in a single hour your judgment has come.'" So then, I turned 50 this past May. I've never used the word "alas" in a conversation in my life. Didn't even know what it meant. And so I'm reading that, "Alas, yeah, all right, yeah, okay." But I was told it's an expression of sorrow. It's an expression of sadness. In some translations, it's translated as the word "woe." But it's expressing sorrow. It's expressing sadness. And so when the kings of the earth see that this great, strong, mighty, wealthy, prosperous city has fallen and come tumbling down, then they weep. They wail. In great despair and in great sadness, which begs the question, why? Why are they so sad? Why are they responding in this way to Babylon's fall? It's not because they're compassionate and they have sensitive hearts and they just, "Oh, Babylon, I feel so bad for you." They're not weeping for Babylon. They're weeping for themselves. They weep and mourn because of all the immoralities that they indulged in Babylon are gone. They're not able to indulge them anymore. The life of luxury that they enjoyed in Babylon, gone. Not able to have a life of luxury anymore. They're crying not because Babylon's dead. They're crying because they're not able to indulge in immorality and live a life of luxury anymore. They're crying because what they're missing out on because of Babylon's fall. And so they weep, they mourn. But they're not the only ones. Next, we see all the merchants of the earth mourn and weep as well. We see this in verse 11. Look there with me. I'll read this real quick. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn for her, since no one buys their cargo anymore. Cargo of gold, silver, jewels, pearls, fine linen, purple cloth, silk, scarlet cloth, all kinds of scented wood, all kinds of articles of ivory, all kinds of articles of costly wood, bronze, iron, and marble, cinnamon, spice, incense, myrrh, frankincense, wine, oil, fine flour, wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots and slaves. That is human souls. The fruit for which your soul longed has gone from you. And all your delicacies and your splendors are lost to you, never to be found again. The merchants of these wares who gain wealth from her will stand far off in fear of her torment, weeping and mourning aloud. Alas, alas, for the great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet, adorned with gold, with jewels, and with pearls, for in a single hour all this wealth has been laid waste. So you see why all the merchants of the earth are mourning and weeping? They're not weeping either because they're all sensitive and compassionate hearts because, oh, sad little Babylon. Just like the kings, they're weeping for themselves. They're weeping for the same exact reasons the kings wept. Because of all the money and all the wealth and all the prosperity they lost when Babylon fell. It's not theirs anymore. They don't get to enjoy it anymore because all their money was made off of Babylon. And since Babylon fell, all their money and their wealth and their prosperity fell with it. Third group then we see who wept and grieved at Babylon's fall are those who make their living on the sea. We see this in verse 17. It says, middle of verse 17, it says, and all shipmasters and seafaring men, sailors and all whose trade is on the sea stood far off and cried out as they saw the smoke of her burning. What city was like the great city? And they threw dust on their heads as they wept and mourned, crying out, alas, alas, for the great city where all who had ships at sea grew rich by her wealth, for in a single hour she has been laid waste. Those who make their living from the sea, they weep for the same reasons the merchants wept and the same reason the kings wept, not because they have sympathetic hearts and compassionate hearts about Babylon. Instead, they weep because all their money. Babylon was how they made all their money. And when Babylon fell, then all their money is gone too. All their wealth is gone too. All their possessions are gone too. All their prosperity is gone too. In other words, for all three of these groups, their ultimate treasure, their ultimate hope was living a life of luxury, a life of prosperity, a life of money, a life of possessions, a life of immorality. It's what their ultimate It's what was ultimate in their lives. All of that is what they lived for. It was materialism. It was affluence. It was possessions. It was prosperity. It was wealth. It was all the toys and treasures and trinkets of Babylon. It was their greatest treasure. And so then when Babylon was destroyed, their ultimate treasure was destroyed with it. And so they mourned and they grieved and they wept and they wailed. And boy, is this an application for us here this morning. Especially in the current present Babylon in which we live. The warning is, don't live for a life of luxury. Don't live for all the trinkets and shiny treasures and money and possessions that is all around you in this Babylon. Like, think about it. This world, the Babylon is doing everything it can do to cause you to fall in love with all the treasures and possessions of this world. You ever thought about this? Like, people are being paid millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to sit in an office for 60 to 70 hours a week to try and cause you to live for all the treasures and trinkets in Babylon. Like right now, there are people in their office who got up early this morning to try and figure out a way to cause you to fall in love with all the material possessions in Babylon. There are billions upon billions upon billions of dollars being poured into technology, advertisement, marketing strategies to cause you to make wealth and prosperity the god of your life. Babylon is doing everything it can do to make you weep and grieve when it falls, just like those three groups we just looked at. And so don't get me wrong. Like, there's nothing wrong with money. There's nothing wrong with possessions. There's nothing wrong with having stuff. Like, money and possessions aren't sinful. Money and possessions aren't evil. But the Bible does say they are dangerous. Everybody with me? Just like living in Johnson County isn't sinful, but living here is dangerous. Living in Babylon isn't sinful, but living in Babylon is dangerous. And so we really, really need to be careful and guard our hearts. We need to guard and protect ourselves from the love of money. Like, watch your expenses. Budget carefully. Set a cap on your expenses if you need to. Set up boundaries. Be generous and give stuff away. Check your heart. Don't put your hope in a job. Don't put your hope in a house. Don't put your hope in a certain 401k or financial profile. Don't base your joy on what you have or don't have. Don't find your contentment and security in what you have or don't have. Because as we see here, none of that's going to last. This Babylon, along with all of its treasures and trinkets, is all coming down. And none of it's going to last. It then leads to the third and final way we should respond to the coming fall of Babylon and the world in which we live. And the final way we should respond is this. We should rejoice over Babylon's fall. We should rejoice over Babylon's fall. You hear that first, you're like, rejoice, this is sad. And yes, it is sad. There's a part of a lament it's a good and healthy lament. But look at verse 20. Look at verse 20. This is the exhortation that the angel gives here to us as believers for how we should respond as God's people, as believers to Babylon's fall. In verse 20, he tells us, rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets. Why? For God has given judgment for you against her. So do you see the contrast that's being made here? Verses 9 through 19, the kings and the merchants and those who work on the sea, what are they doing? They're weeping. They're grieving. They're mourning when Babylon falls. While those who are Christians are exhorted to rejoice, are exhorted to celebrate. Which begs the question, why? Why are we to rejoice and celebrate when this whole thing comes tumbling and crashing down? We just read it at the end of verse 20. Look there. For, here's the reason you should rejoice, for God has given judgment for you against her. In other words, the reason we should rejoice, because when that day comes and Babylon falls and comes crushing down, then on that day, justice will finally and fully and completely be served. That all those who suffered at the hands of Babylon, all those who've ever been enticed by Babylon, all those who've ever been hurt and mistreated and manipulated and even deceived by Babylon will be vindicated when the twisted, morally corrupt, proud, God-hating, worldly culture and system in which we live falls and comes crumbling down and tumbling down once and for all. When every act of evil, every injustice, every moral perversion is finally and fully judged and done away with forever. And when that day comes, then we're not going to grieve as the kings do and the merchants do and those who work on the sea do. Instead, we're not going to grieve at all. We're going to rejoice because we know that Babylon's fall in judgment means the arrival of a new and greater city for all of God's people, the New Jerusalem. And when the New Jerusalem comes, the music will never stop. Like in Babylon, production and industry and goods, sanctifying work will never stop and end. Like in Babylon, the light will never go out. Like in Babylon, and most of all, in this New Jerusalem, there will be one final, ultimate wedding that will be more lavish and great than all the weddings that have ever occurred in Babylon, including yours and mine, combined. As we, Jesus' bride, see our bridegroom for the very first time, face to face. And so then in light of those realities, don't live for Babylon. Don't live for this present city. Instead, live for and long for the everlasting city, the New Jerusalem that is to come. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for chapters in the Bible that help to wake us up in ways to cause us to come out of the slumber in which we're in, to pull back the curtain, to be able to see the reality of who the world and the world system and culture is. It's not a friend. It's Babylon. And as God's people, this isn't our home. We're living in exile, longing for the day in which this Babylon comes falling down. And through Jesus, you usher us into a new and greater city, the New Jerusalem to come, where we'll sing and feast and celebrate in the light, and work and labor and be productive in a holy, glorified way. And as we'll live in the presence as your bride, in the presence of our bridegroom, in awe and exhilarating joy. And since all of that is true, Lord, keep us as a church and individuals of our church from being sucked into the luxurious, prosperous, enticing American dream and all the immoralities that are attached with it. Help us to be different. Help us to come out of Babylon and look as if we don't belong here. And look as if we're living for a new and greater city that's everlasting, that is still yet to come. And we pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.